Hello, everybody. This is Michael, and we are continuing with our dissipation of glamour webinars. Last week, I told you all that we had a Blue Rose Sisterhood Initiation Mystery Week up here in Finland, and so that was very demanding. And then, with some people, we left to the far north to continue the process, and we were on a train when the glamour webinar should have taken place, and I had no one volunteered to take the place, so we had to have a week in between. But I trust you all are working on your particular individual glamour using the searchlight technique. And then, as you know, in these very divisive times, we're working on the glamour of hatred and separativeness. Those are two of the heads of the Hydra. The fifth head is hate, and the eighth head is separation or separativeness. But we're combining them together. Really, one belongs more to the world of illusion, perhaps. The general misperception of separation between the contents of consciousness. We have so many contents of consciousness, and we perceive them as not only distinct from each other, but separate from each other, and not of the same essence or substance, which is a major illusion on our part. Maybe it's the major illusion, and that separative perception, which it takes millions of years for a human being to emerge from, that type of perception can lead to the possibility of the glamour of hatred. And the DK once refers to it as the great glamour of hatred, as he says. And Matsumori calls it a hideous comma. Peculiar language, but obviously we have to overcome these things, and within ourselves, first of all. Let's just have a little bit of a connection with each other. The idea that we are in many different places, apparently, geographically, and in terms of time, although it's now at the present time, whatever our other time seems to be. And we are merging together in each other's field of consciousness, which is really one, potentially one field of consciousness. And it is as if one being is perceiving out of many different, a number of different sensory apparatus. It's all one perception, even though the particular apertures of perception are seemingly limited. So we are together attempting to create a lighted, illumined field in the mind and not to fall victim to those desires which chase after unreal phantasms, things that seem real but are not real, and ultimately are a waste of energy and immerse us in negative karma, which has to be expiated. So we, as if, stand above those kinds of attractions which have captivated so many. We learn to do this individually, and we learn to do this as a group. Okay, well, I guess there are, 30 something of us here so far. I just want to say hi to all of you. We really are all over the world here, New Zealand and Europe and the United States and, Australia. We're everywhere here, and we can work together. Now, what I've been doing, I guess this is sort of the 12th program, because one has been skipped. I call it 12-13. We've been reading in the Glamour Book, and then going into the glamour for the meditation for the dissipation of group and world glamour. So here we continue the discussion of this ancient world prayer with which we are all familiar, having studied the Blue Books and working in the various esoteric schools. The last line or two that we read last time, it is interesting to note that the most ancient prayer in the world, amazing, huh? Ancient, the most ancient prayer in the world refers to the three aspects of glamour. And it is for these that the three techniques must be used to make release and progress possible. As you know, this prayer, as followed in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, is as follows. Lead us, O Lord, and this would be, of course, our own solar angel and our own supervising major deity. Lead us, O Lord, from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, and from death to immortality. The three aspects of divinity are here indicated, and the three techniques are indicated. We're working right now on the technique of light. That's what this section is, but when we're talking about going into the higher planes, the cosmic ethers, we are really moving from the death, which is confinement within the dense physical body of the planetary logos, that kind of death of consciousness, into a liberation of consciousness, into a truly living and principled area of the divine manifestation. Right now we're in a dense physical body, and not just our own dense physical body, we're in the dense physical body of the planetary logos and also of the solar logos. And that's old business, and we have to work our way through that karma. That is old, and really begin principled life does not really begin until we reach the cosmic ethers, and you know what that looks like here. The fourth, third, second, and first subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. So we're working our way into the area of livingness gradually. And when we extricate ourselves from glamour and illusion and from the mindless impulsions of Maya, then we will be liberated into the higher worlds. So anyway, here, looking at some of these, this ancient prayer, and that's where we really begin today, lead us from darkness to light. And in that light we shall see light. Ever a greater type of revelatory potential is encountered, and more comes to light, until eventually the entire, well, it's really eventually, the entire contents of consciousness of the universal logos is revealed to us, because we are identified as that all-seeing eye. Don't hold your breath, because that's a long, long time, and although our universe may be in process of retraction, we're not sure about that. It's just trillions upon trillions upon trillions upon trillions that keep going of years, at least according to the occult chronology, before that can really happen. Lead us from darkness to light, but in a more relative sense, we can emerge from the dense physical body of the planetary logos, and even at the fourth initiation, emerging from the dense physical body of the solar logos, we can do that at least, and enter into a higher quality of light. Lead us from darkness to light refers to the mind as it becomes eventually illumined by the light of the intuition. And as we saw, the light of the intuition really is pouring from this intuitional plane, which we call the Buddhic plane. And the intuition per se as a faculty is found right there on the fourth sub-level of that particular plane. So lead us from darkness to light. The light of the intuition is illumining the mind, and we have the mind then held steady in the light of the intuition. Once we have the antikarana going, and before that, the mind held steady in the light of the soul. This illumination is brought about by the technique of the presence from whom the great light shines. Now, you know, what is that presence? That presence, in a way, is the presence of the monad within the higher mental plane, within the type of matter that is found on the higher mental plane within the egoic lotus. That's one aspect of the presence. Another aspect of the presence which blends with our own monadic, our extended monadic consciousness, is the as much of the solar angel as that solar angel has deemed fit to put down into the higher mental plane, and then can act according to the ancient statement, having pervaded the entire universe, the universe of the egoic lotus, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. So that is the presence that we're talking about. The monad is present, the solar angel is present, they're blending their consciousness, and we look upward toward the infusion, contact with and infusion by that higher presence. So, the technique of the presence brings in the qualities of those energies, and we are able to dispel illusion, which is found on the lower mental plane particularly, although DK has told us that really our illusions do not end until the ninth initiation, and I have a feeling that's just the beginning. Every plane has its illusions. This is the mediating factor producing the transfiguration of the personality, this light of the intuition, and a center of radiant light upon the mental plane. Now, notice that as the personality becomes ever more composed of atomic subplane matter, it is entirely atomic subplane matter by the time the fourth initiation is taken, then we have what's called the transfiguration, and that will mean that the whole personality is no longer limited by the nature of the lunar lords, but in fact can respond quite adequately to these higher streams of energy which come from the cosmic ether. So it's a really an illumined personality beyond the ordinary forms, beyond the ordinary limiting forms. This is the this illumination is the mediating factor producing the transfiguration of the personality, and a center of radiant light upon the mental plane. This statement is true whether one is speaking of an individual or of that focal point of light which is formed by the mental unity and the clear thinking of advanced humanity. So we're forming this station of light upon the mental plane throughout all humanity, and it includes all of those who are members of the illumining body called the New Group of World Servers and Advanced Thinkers and so forth. A station of light on the mental plane is being created. These, through the power of their unified minds, will succeed in ridding the world of some aspects of the great illusion. Some aspects of the, my wife is telling me, don't talk so fast. Okay, right. Anyway, but not all aspects of the great illusion, because when you really think of it, perception on the cosmic physical plane is still the great illusion. So, but we can at least rid the human mind of some of the worst aspects of the great heresy of separativeness, which is the major illusion to be found upon the mental plane. Okay, so that's a little bit about lead us from darkness to light. Then we come and that deals pretty much with the third aspect of divinity. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Well, this is really the statement about glamour, isn't it? It has specific relation to the astral plane, and it's all encompassing glamorous. You know, we are, if we have any kind of astral functionality at all, we will either be subject to these glamours or at least surrounded by them in our astral functioning, and we have to somehow clear a space around us where they cannot possibly affect our sentient desire reactions. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Has specific relation to the astral plane, and it's all-encompassing glamours. They may look quite fine and appealing to people who are falling under their spell, but DK says it's a gray, ugly mass of indistinct forms. So really, it's not so pleasant when you really see it from a higher point of view. These glamours embody the unreal and present them to the prisoners of the astral plane. I mean, those people whose consciousness is limited by astral perception, and they are quite enthralled by their own desire nature. So they, these glamours embody the unreal and present them to the prisoners of the astral plane, leading them to mistake them for reality. And this is happening all the time, you know. We make some out-of-the-ordinary contact on the astral plane, and it's something new to us, and we think of it, because it is vitally in our perception, we think of it as real, but it's really a distorting veil upon the real. You know, one of the examples here is when we think we're contacting the masters and they are offering us, as the DK says, good words of mediocre cheer, something like that, good words of mediocre cheer, and we think it's the real master, and in fact it's just an astral thought form of the master which has been built by the devotees of that master, and we take it for the real thing, and we're convinced because it's so different from our ordinary sensory perceptions, and it takes a long time for us to disengage from our false perception that these are realities. This imprisonment, now think of it that way, you know, what makes humanity free or not, this imprisonment by glamour can be ended by the activity of the technique of light. That's what we're working on first. He actually deals with the technique of the presence first, but when we later get into discussing illusion, then we'll deal with the technique of the presence, but this is the first and immediate work to be done, and maybe a little bit easier than working with the technique of the presence. This imprisonment by glamour can be ended by the activity of the technique of light, utilized by those who work in group formation for the dissipation of glamour and for the emergence in the consciousness of men, human beings, of a clear conception and recognition of the nature of reality. Now you can see how much the fifth ray is needed there, even though it is largely sixth ray aspirants and disciples who are working in this manner. The 2-4-6 line works there, but the fifth ray is so needed for the clarity of conception. We want to see what lies behind the veil, and we have created this veil. We have created the veil of glamour through our desires throughout many millions of years as we were up and coming through the stage of astral polarization, and we're still creating those illusory forms which are not yet the real thing, even when we're on the spiritual path, because we imagine that our objectives are certain masters and spiritual states, and it's just our imagining, and then we gravitate towards that imagining. It's not the real thing. This particular work of dissipation is our immediate theme. It is of vital importance that those who recognize the open door to the future through which all men must pass, it sounds like the door of initiation, doesn't it, should begin to carry forward this work of dissipation, certainly in our own lives and if we are so-called in the larger sphere. Only thus can humanity be helped to leave behind the errors, the glamours, and the failures of the past, all through, you know, we might say distorted, mistaken perception. It is this technique which brings freedom from glamour and which can transform human living and so bring in the new civilization and culture, which I would like to remind us, you know, is largely on the fifth ray, not only on the seventh ray. The ray of humanity during the Aquarian Age will be the fifth ray personality. And the sign Aquarius, or the constellation Aquarius, brings in particularly the fifth ray and not the seventh, although the seventh ray cycle of some 2,500 years corresponds with the incoming, processional incoming of the age of Aquarius. So freedom from glamour and which can transform human living and so bring in the new civilization and culture. This dissipation can be carried forward by disciples in all parts of the planet, aided by the world aspirants. So the disciples take the lead because they have that mental focus and maybe not yet mental polarization, because you have to have passed the midway point between the second and third initiation to be mentally polarized, but at least mental focus, and the aspirants aspire to assist. It will, however, be primarily the work of those whose ray focus makes astral living the line of least resistance. And even though that is so, they have learnt or are learning to dominate that type of astral focus and living by the power of thought and mental light. So there, the Asna Center, ruled by Venus, ruled by the fifth ray for most people, is indispensable in this type of mental living, which actually sees what we desire. Now think about that. Sometimes we just desire what we desire, and we don't see the relationship of the desire to the other aspects of the world. We want what we want and when we want it, and we don't see the implications of what we are striving for. But this mental light coming from the Asna Center, and remember that the new group of world servers is essentially the Asna Center of Sanat Kumara, this helps us see what we want instead of just wanting what we want. And that's a whole other step of standing back, and we can begin to control and make our desires, and make them, in the words of Master Moria, make them goal fit. Okay, so we're learning to dominate, these people are learning to dominate astral living by the power of thought and mental light, and we know that every disciple is at least learning to be mentally focused, even if that disciple is not yet mentally polarized. These are the sixth ray people in the first instance, aided by aspirants and disciples upon the second and the fourth rays. So it's largely a 2-4-6 work we're doing here, but the fifth ray, with its clarity of perception, you know, the fifth ray lord is the most luminous of all the ray lords. It's this fifth ray which is indispensable in actually seeing and penetrating and piercing these glamours and seeing their implications and seeing that they have no value and helping them to dissipate them. I think read one more paragraph, and then we'll ask if there are thoughts or questions which you would, you know, like to propose. In time and space, that's kind of interesting, because, you know, where is time and space anyway? It's especially in the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos. Time and space is existing in a way, in subtler ways, on all the different levels, but the kind of time and space we're talking about, which you overcome when you overcome illusion, is pretty much confined to the dense physical vehicle of the planetary and solar logos, which are the three worlds in which we habitually live. In time and space, this task will first of all be instituted and controlled in group formation. That's what we're trying to do here, right? Only by aspirants whose soul or personality rays are the sixth. Think about that. Or by those whose astral bodies are conditioned by the sixth ray. Well, you know, that was pretty much true. When DK organized his trained observers group, his, shall we say, dissipation of glamour group, every one of them had the sixth ray in some prominent position. So the task will, first of all, you know, maybe not later entirely, but at least in the beginning, first of all, be instituted and controlled only, and that's interesting, you know, You know, these are the people suited for the job, by aspirants whose soul or personality rays are the sixth, or by those whose astral bodies are conditioned by the sixth ray. When they have grasped the nature of the work to be done, and this is an interesting quote, fanatically adopted the technique of light in the service of the race, which means, I suppose, with great intense focus upon this technique and application of the technique, when they have fanatically adopted the technique of light in the service of the race, their work will be completed by second ray disciples who have a more maybe rounded out point of view, and working from the ashrams of those masters who take disciples. And obviously not all ashrams do. So it's begun by the sixth ray types, or those who have some strong sixth ray in their nature, and is completed by the second ray disciples who naturally bring things to some rounded out conclusion. The work done by these two groups will be finally revealed, and at a much later date, by those aspirants and disciples who will swing into astral activity when the fourth ray again begins to manifest. Now, he wrote this, I suppose, in the 1940s, early, maybe 1930s. Are we reaching that much later date now, at 2025, when the fourth ray, from its monadic aspect, is beginning to manifest? It began in 1924, but really by 2025 it's pretty intense, and quite a number of fourth ray souls, I think, will be coming in. So the work done by these two groups, the sixth ray and the second ray types, will be finally revealed at a much later date by those aspirants and disciples who will swing into astral activity when the fourth ray again begins to manifest. We're not quite there yet. We have another 9 years, and then we don't know how rapidly that inflow of fourth ray types will be coming, but they will be in a position really to apply the light of the intuition in this process. Therefore, the work of dissipating glamour is carried forward by those who come out into manifestation along the lines of energy which embody the second, fourth, and sixth rays. I emphasize this as disciples frequently undertake tasks for which they are not particularly fitted. You know, we don't want to bark up the wrong tree, do we? And whose rays do not aid them in accomplishment, and sometimes prevent that accomplishment. So we have to know whether we're fit for the job. Now, DK was presented with, I don't know, 50 or 100 different disciples from whom he might choose the membership of his groups. And he didn't put everybody in the same group. The very first group that he organized was the telepathic communicators. They all had a lot of first ray in their system because, you know, the telepathic communication is a type of activity which relates to the first subplane of the mental plane. So they had to have first ray. I think almost every one of them had first ray. I could look at the list, but And then he came to the glamour group, or the trained observers group, and that group had a lot of sixth ray in it. Then he went to the healers, and the healers had to have a particular relationship to the etheric physical plane, and you know, so therefore the third ray and the seventh ray were pretty prominent there, and I think especially the seventh ray, or their orientation was more towards substantiality of the etheric physical plane. And then came the education group, which was very mercurial, and I think was using the head center, the absence center, and the throat center, a lot of mercury energy, a lot of fourth ray, fourth group, and so forth. But he never got very far in organizing the political organizers. So anyway, he was very selective, according to the rays, regarding how he chose the membership of these groups. Okay, now I think I've said enough for the moment, and I'd like to open the floor to anyone who wants to ask a question, make a comment, say something, or write something, whatever.
Yes.
So I'll keep my mind alert, and Brett, you've got someone coming up.
Yes, Steph. asks, how does the dissipation of glamour work? Correlate to the subconscious that Jung and others refer to. Are we doing, quote, shadow work, end quote, for the masses, helping them with what ordinarily would be done by the individual? Is the astral plane the same as that subconscious?
There's a lot of, okay, I have to read this out loud because not everybody has been able to hear. So basically, how does the dissipation of glamour work, correlate to the subconscious that Jung and others refer to? Are we doing shadow work for the masses? Well, and for ourselves, we are doing shadow work. Definitely, because we're dealing with an unconscious aspect of our own nature, which may be inhibiting us because we don't understand it, and it is driving us and compelling us in certain ancient directions which do not lead to the light. So are we doing shadow work for the masses, helping them with what ordinarily would be done by the individual? Is the astral plane the same as the subconscious? Okay, so there are several questions there. The work of the shadow is the work of facing the hidden parts of our nature, long suppressed, long repressed, and long forgotten aspects of our nature. And under the work of Pluto, these things do come to light. And we may be dealing with ancient. He says the ancient fears of humanity are hidden, actually, not in the solar plexus center, but in the sacral center. He tells that to one of his disciples, R.S.W. So these things have been so long suppressed that as we prepare for the first initiation and even work towards the second, up come via the plutonic energies things long forgotten, which we could call the subconscious. Because they are there, they are tendencies, they are images, they are impulsions, and so forth, and they have to be confronted in a reasonable manner, seeing where they go. So in a way, we're doing shadow work very definitely. And are we doing it for the masses? Yes, to the extent that we work in the field of group glamour and are trying to dissipate the glamours that hold humanity in thrall. Many people will benefit from it, but of course, we have to begin with ourselves. Is the let's see if I can get this correct, because there are a number of questions there, and unfortunately, Brett, when I try to put Steph's question up again, I get it up once, and then I can't get it up again. I don't know why that is so, but so what was that last question? Is the subconscious the same as?
Is the astral plane the same as that subconscious?
Not exactly. Is the astral plane the same as that subconscious? Because there are areas of the astral plane which, depending upon the quality of our astral matter, that we may not have even experienced yet ourselves. In other words, we have yet to become, let's just say that human beings working on the fourth level or the third level of the astral plane have yet to become conscious of the kind of imagination and idealism and higher astral vibrations of the summer lands and other types of heavens which exist for higher types of astral orientation. In other words, if we haven't experienced it yet, if we haven't been through that type of desire and suppressed it and forgotten it, it's not part of our subconscious. So in terms of our own personal subconscious, it has to be something we have been engaging with and which has fallen down like sediment and is long forgotten to be part of our subconscious. It's still yet to be experienced by some. So in a sense, there's not an exact equivalence between the astral plane and the subconscious, because many people are functioning on a rather low level of the astral plane, and for them, the new types of emotion and desire are super. They remain yet to be experienced. So that which is experienced can become sub, but that which is not yet experienced has to be regarded as super. Now, usually when we talk about super consciousness, we're talking about what is in the soul or maybe what is in the intuitional plane and so forth, because we're most of us are quite focused upon the mind, the lower mind. There was a time when that lower mind was super to us or superior to us. It couldn't be part of our subconscious because we hadn't yet really experienced it. So my thesis here is, if you experience it, and if you move on and you no longer attend to it, it can fall down like sediment into an area of latency, which, as DK says, can be whipped up into recognition and even into a storm. So the subconscious, to me, is that which has been experienced one way or another. Now, did I cover everything there in that question? Because I can't, I don't know why, Brett, I can't get the the question to repeat.
Steph replies, yes, thank you.
Yes, okay. Okay, to you, you have something you would like to say. Go ahead, please.
It is just a little comment about the shadow. I have noticed that very often when people are referring to shadow, or DK is referring to shadow, people translate it as evil. Well, in one sense it is true, but then in one sense we have to also reflect our understanding about the shadow to this whole cosmic physical plane. Even the highest entity or the ruler, when we think about Shiva, who has the crescent moon on his forehead, means the lord of the shadows or lord of the underworlds. All of the higher lords are still working with this lower substance in relationship to this cosmic sense. So all of that are the realm of the shadows. We are supposed to function, and we are the lord of the shadows, like Osiris is the lord of the underworld. We are the lords of the underworld. We all work in the shadows from this higher sense of understanding. All those lower devas are the devas of the shadows that we are supposed to cultivate and take under our control in order to transmute them, transform them. And then in the third initiation we have the transfiguration. So the whole concept of shadow is much more vast and much more, I think, fascinating than only thinking about that it is somewhere on the particular subplane. It is this whole cosmic physical plane.
Yes, you know, I'm reminded to you that DK told us that the monad is the reality, the soul is the reflection, and the personality is the shadow. So just, you know, when you think about the word shadow, it can only identify the outline of a shape. It does not give you any articulation of the internal contents of the reality. A reflection does that. A reflection will give you an idea of the internal contents of the original, but it doesn't have the livingness of the original. I would just like to say that anything that we have lived through can be considered a shadow to us, because we are concentrating now on some higher, more original center of energy. The shadow is always related to the past, and the redemption of the shadow means to be rid of the tendencies of the shadow which lead away from the light on which we are now concentrating. It's a very big subject, and you know, Jung was and Freud were deeply into this, but without the theosophical terminology. Okay, let's see, where are we? Are there any other thoughts or questions that you would like to offer up to this point?
Yes. Dorothy says,
yeah, go ahead,
subconscious vs. not conscious. Is this because it is emotion that gives experience substance, makes it real?
Okay, let's see who is asking that, because I would like
Dorothy.
To see that question. Dorothy, okay. Dorothy. Okay, let's see if I can get... Why can't I get... Brett, why can't I...
there should
it's so
be
strange.
A button to the left of the X that you can click to open up the questions window.
the left, I have a question mark.
Just to the
and okay,
just to
the
the
question
left
mark
of
doesn't
the
do
X
it.
in the upper right hand corner, in the right hand corner of the pane.
Okay. I hope unlock control panel. Unlock. There's a little X way up high. And
then there's X's on the right hand side for each item, and then just to the left of them is the icon you click.
So which one am I looking for? Which item am I looking for?
The questions list, the questions pane, and then to the right. The right of the word questions is a little icon with a small upper left arrow and a big lower right arrow.
Yeah, I see that. The only thing is I don't see the thing that says questions.
Ah.
So where would that be?
In your view menu, look and see if there's a check mark by questions. At the top of the control panel.
Okay, top of the control panel where it says file. Okay, view, okay.
Is questions.
And there isn't. Okay, now I have it. Okay. Thank you. That is a clarification. Did you notice the fifth ray at work, friends? Brett was lucidly explaining the procedure to reach that. That is the fifth ray. Okay, so subconscious versus not conscious. Is this because it is emotion that gives experience substance, makes it real? Well, okay, that's an interesting use of words, Dorothy. Subconscious has been experienced, as far as I'm concerned. Not conscious is everything that is super and yet to be experienced. Whether or not we say emotion is that which gives experience substance, what is experience? I mean, experience is perception, correct? In other words, whatever we perceive, whatever we sense, whatever we contact, whenever we contact the not-self in one of the modalities of contacting that not-self, then we have a type of experience. So there are mental experiences, there are buddhic experiences. I would not say that it is emotion per se that gives experience substance, but it is contact of the not-self by the emotional processes which attract us or deflect us from that which we contact. So, in other words, we register something in the astral body and immediately the plus minus enters. We are attracted to it, or we are repelled from it, or maybe we're indifferent to it. That is the third option. Whether that is what you mean by substance, I'm not sure. Okay. We remember best what emotion has been, when emotion has been attached to it. That may be the case. Or when we are a higher type of initiate, we may remember best what has been most intensely impressed upon us from the higher planes. Right now we are, you know, average human beings is what we are. The emotions are vital. The majority of human beings are emotionally polarized. On our planet, the greatest difficulty is emotional. Our planetary logos has the greatest difficulty with his astral body. This is an astral solar system, so indeed, you say we may remember best when emotion is attached to it, and that's what the psychologists have found. But later, when we start to deal with the more initiate consciousness, there may be a brilliant thought, for instance, which is illuminative and clarifying. It may not touch the astral body at all, and yet may be a real impulsion towards vivid memory. At least that's my view. So, you know, this would require some discussion, but it seems to me that experience can be given vividness and remembrance on a number of planes. Higher experience has overwhelming emotion attached to it, positive emotion, perhaps. The question is the emotional body necessarily involved in all higher experiences? Maybe. And maybe we're just involved in the thrill of the faculty itself. And the emotion In other words, there may be an emotional effect later or during, but at the moment of realization, there may be no emotion whatsoever. So, you know, this is my view at the moment, but we can discuss it further. Ah, now here's a question. Isn't love higher emotion? And DK would say that although love affects the emotional body in a very positive manner, that love is a principle which is not derived from emotion. Unless you want to talk about the emotions of the cosmic astral plane. You know, if we want to start talking about the origin of true love, he sometimes tells us it happens from the cosmic astral plane, and that's just for us, okay? We can go farther than that. But that, of course, is so far beyond anything that we call our astral body that, you know, we would be hard-pressed to call that emotion. The origin of love is like this. For us, at the present time, the cosmic astral plane, ruled by Neptune, in a way, the monadic plane, which is the second and is related to the heart center of the solar logos, then the buddhic plane, in which what we normally call love wisdom comes through, and then descending into the synthesis petal, the love synthesis petal of the egoic lotus, and then into the love petals, and then into the heart within the head, and thence into the heart center, and affecting along the way the astral body. The astral body is not the origin of love. Okay. Now, is it okay? That's the best I can do on that at the moment. It's a huge question, but when you say, what is love? It is not emotion, but it affects the emotional vehicle. It is not derived from emotion. It's not derived from the emotional vehicle whatsoever. It's derived from much higher sources. Okay, is there anything else? So in the astral body, the sense of love is the reflection, not necessarily, is the reflection of an attachment. So in the astral body, love is the reflection of attachment. No, what we call love in the astral body is often simply a desire. But the reflection of love in the astral body is a stimulus coming from a higher source altogether and gives a very expansive and beautiful, harmonious feeling in the astral body. The heart of the sun, for instance, affects the astral body at the second initiation. We could not call that an attachment. But we can say that many people, when they think they're experiencing love, are experiencing some sort of desire for an object of perception. So we have to discriminate here between love and desire. Oh, Brett, you opened a Pandora's box here when you taught me how to see these questions. All right. Okay, Dorothy, well, thanks for those searching questions. And let's see, now John has one. So
Michael,
in the answer, yes?
You also have hands up, so I just wanted you to know.
Okay, good. And that was from John. That, not from Dorothy. So basically, I hope I answered your question, John. And let's see about, and thanks, BL. Let's take a look at the hands. And, okay, Walter, go ahead. Go ahead, Walter.
Yes, I found it remarkable and of interest, the concept of people working in areas that they are predisposed to or have the line of least resistance toward, such as the Ray 6 people working on the dissipation of glamour, mm-hmm. which may be counterintuitive. And that brings to mind that similarly, Seed Group 2, the trained observers, uses the often emotionally oriented solar plexus center. And so I suppose that there's a deeper concept that we have to have the equipment or experience, so to speak, to really work in a particular area.
If you created the problem, you have to solve it. And it's the people, you know, who have particularly the 2-4-6 line, and particularly the 6th line, that have been involved, as so much of humanity was, in creating this miasma. So the old, you know, when you look at our police forces right now, they may well be the criminals of previous incarnations who have learned a lot in that process. So what you originate, you have to take care of. That's the principle, I think, is there. And each one of us, you know, how do we know what we gravitate towards, what our best line of service may be? We may have certain abilities in any one of the 10 seed group areas, but in some of them we may have a special emphasis. You may remember, Walter, that the seed group number 2 has exactly the same chakras activated, you know, in discipleship in the New Age, maybe around page 40 or so, the same chakras activated as the workers in the New World religion. It's the head center, the heart center, and the solar plexus center. And again, the psychologists have the same thing, except to that they add the interpretive throat center. So we have to work on the astral plane, because humanity is polarized in that way. And we have to clarify the desire nature before we can really clarify the mind and rid ourselves of illusion. So knowing who you are, knowing what your rays are, knowing what your real gravitation is towards any particular line of service is of the utmost importance. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. DK always tells us that, you know, when we're barking up the wrong tree, when we're serving in areas that other people can handle better because we don't know ourselves well enough, or other people can handle it who have not the same kind of occult knowledge, we are wasting time. So this discrimination as to the nature of oneself and one's suitability for any line of service is essential. And hence the study of the rays and the study of astrology and, you know, really getting in touch with our soul nature. Okay, thanks, Walter, for that question. Okay, I'm looking for other hands, BL, or Brett, or were there other hands? Let's see. And were there other questions?
I don't see any more hands, but I do see another question.
Okay, and I'm going to ask Brett. Now that I have checked under view questions, every time that I hit a question mark, should I be able to see the question? Let's just see how that works.
But
okay, anyway, question. Okay, I seem to see it now. Now I can see it for myself.
Good.
Okay, so how can one determine which group they belong to, assuming that we all can be part of one of those groups? Well, okay, that's from Steph, right? Now, I was trying to kind of answer that. First of all, it's a deep, intuitive feeling and attraction towards a particular line of service. And then it is knowledge of one's rays and knowledge of one's esoteric astrology, and to a certain extent the idea of where one is working on the path of discipleship and initiation. Several factors come together there. You know, for instance, if I might have an educated interest in economics, but I would be completely unsuited to work in the seed group number 9, okay? And although, let's just say I have an interest in science, a general interest, but mostly in occult science, I'm not suited to work in seed group number 7. My rays and the particular chakras involved are not suited. Along the 2-4-6 line, I might have a particular choice where one or two of these things. Here, let me go here, Steph. Let me just find this, and maybe I can clarify this point just a little bit, because I know you have seen this list that I'm going to try to reach here. I'm going to try to reach it. Okay. Okay, so let's see. Right. I'm going to go to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, and I'm going to go to around page 38 or something like that. Okay, there we go. Here we go. Telepathic communicators, the very first one. And they must be a bit higher up there. Am I missing that? Yeah, telepathic communicators. Okay. Now, the main leaders and the most advanced students that DK had in his group of 50 or so, including Alice Bailey and Foster Bailey and Regina Keller and people like that, who were really, you know, foundational to the whole group, they were in the telepathic communicators, and they took down the major ideas coming from the Antikorana and from the higher aspects than the trained observers. Okay? We read carefully, involved in the dissipation of glamour. Now look, do you have a strong gravitation towards healing? Because in this respect, not only physical etheric healing, but emotional healing and mental healing go here, and some people just know in their heart that that's really what their job is. Or do you find yourself to be an educator in the New Age, you know, working with the Antikorana? Now, let's just say the whole Maurya Federation and, you know, Arcane School and all these various schools, obviously the people involved in them have a strong gravitation towards education, and the planet Mercury will be pronounced for them. The political organizers, who among us is really qualified to work there? Maybe there are a few of us who are endowed with the first ray and other popularizing second ray tendencies and harmonizing fourth ray tendencies, political workers, but do you feel the gravitation to do that? Real gravitation, and is it your sole impression that you must do that? So you have to meditate to find out. The workers in the field of religion, okay, I think that stands for itself. The New World Religion is coming in with all of the astrological contents and basically a great second-rate group. Then the scientific servers, number seven. Not many of the groups in the new esoteric schools come that way, but there are a few workers in the headquarters of various Lucis organizations that are really involved in the scientific understanding. The psychologists, maybe many of us, including DK, will be involved in psychology because we're told even that the science of the seven rays will lead to the new psychology, okay? And that even a treatise on cosmic fire is a psychological treatise, is the psychological key to the secret doctrine. So are we theosophically inclined people interested in psychology? Yes. Okay. The economic groups, financiers and economists, maybe not so many. And finally, a synthetic group eventually made out of three workers in every one of the previous nine fields and constituting 27 people will be the creative magical workers more and more. So what I would say to you is in deep meditation, you can't do everything. If you try to, you spread yourself too thin and won't accomplish much. Out of the things you gravitate towards, what will be the most impressive that you feel you simply must participate in? Like, I'll give you an example of myself. I'm terribly interested in psychology, you know, and the dissipation of glamour was maybe thrust upon me, and I'm interested in a lot of things. But I know that education must be my field. You know, must be. And therefore, you know, I've been involved in starting schools and perpetuating schools and things like that. What impresses you among those 10 and among several other lists of possibilities as the most necessary contribution that you can make, the most vital contribution, and one that you are most suited to make? You don't want to just reach for something that's way beyond you. You want to say, given my abilities, given my tendencies, given my rays, given my astrology, given my deep intuitive conviction, which one of these is the one that I put the most emphasis upon? Okay, so I hope that answers your question a little bit anyway. Okay, anything else there? Maybe anything else? Okay. Well. Okay, so maybe, you know, maybe it does not pay for us to go beyond this point because, you know, usually an hour or so working in the academics is important, so we've done that, and we'll continue. When is our next meeting? It's next for the glamour work. Brett, you have that possibly. Maybe I should. It's on the 2nd. It's on the 2nd of September. That Friday morning. Okay, this one's evening, and that's Friday morning. Yes. So we won't do any more here with this right now. And I will ask you, you know, if you have any questions later. And this will be the end of, well, let's call it Dissipation of Glamour, number 12. And I kind of called it 12-13. And this was today, the 26th of August. And the next will be the beginning of, let's just call it 13. And it will be the 2nd of September. And we'll let you know. Now, lately, you know, we have been with the Initiation Mystery Week work in the Blue Rose Sisterhood. And by the way, you know, men can be part of this too in terms of the Shiva Brotherhood. So it's first and second ray, and it's very much oriented towards preparing the human consciousness for the reception of the Christ consciousness. So it has everything to do with the reappearance of the Christ. So you are, you know, men are welcome too, as Shiva brothers. So anyway, we've had all this going on, and I've maybe been a little bit out of the loop at times, not able entirely to carry on, nor to you, but we will be as regular as we can be, and when we can't be, through Brett and others, we will let you know that it is not possible for us to carry on one of the five ASK programs that we normally carry on every week. And as you know how it goes, it's the triangles on Wednesday, it's the reappearance of the Christ on Thursday, glamour on Friday, the invoking the souls of nations from destiny of the nations on Saturday, and the attracting money for hierarchical purposes on Sunday. Okay, so before we get into our meditation, are there any questions or comments? Okay, if not, then we can proceed, I think. Okay, and someone said, and I think it was Steph, thank you, very helpful. As you say, it can be tricky because it seems a person can be fit for more than one group. Yes, you know, someone like DK, I think he could do them all, but he would, you know, probably leave to Master R and his group the financial and magical side of it. So, good. Okay, if that's a better understanding, that's great, Steph. Very good. All right, then let's go on. And we're working on the two types of glamour. I think I better make this. This is quite big. I think it's too big, maybe. There we go. Okay. We're going to have our meditation then. Okay. Now, although we cannot name each other as we would in a smaller group, we can, first of all, reach out towards each other. There's some 40-something of us here. And we can get the sense of working together from a soul-influenced perspective. And that somehow, wherever we are, physically, we are still together in consciousness. So in this silence, we think of each other, but we are more like soul-infused personalities, or really we are souls who have come together to work through personalities. Now we come to our protective formula, and when we're doing it, we can make the sign of the cross, but DK's sign of the cross has to do with the ajna and the center of the chest, and then the two eyes, you see. It's an elongated cross. This is what he asks us to do. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. It's important to memorize this, you know, as you work with this, even in little mini meditations that you might find time for during the day. So we prepare by, we're focusing the light of matter, it's essentially the astral, etheric, and physical planes, and of mind. It's a dual light. We focus the dual light of mind and matter. And we do that focusing upon the mental plane, thus drawing up the light of lower substance in our personality. Each tiny atom is a unit of light, even though it might be dark light. We draw up the light of matter and focus with the light of mind on the mental plane. And then we visualize the soul. We meditate on soul contact and recognize soul light. It's a great inner reality, and we try to see it, feel it, realize it. And now we bring them all together. There's the light of matter-mind on the plane of mind, and in comes the soul light, making a triple light. Triple light. On the plane of mind. Visualize that, and it will become our searchlight. And then we say together, the light is one, and in that light we shall see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Then we say together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work, and turn the darkness into day. And we have been visualizing the great searchlight, which we are creating in an individual and group sense, turning that searchlight together, made of three lights, now one, onto the astral plane. We are clearly linking the light of the soul and its associated lights with the condition of the astral plane. And now we're going together to invoke the spiritual will. We call upon that will. It's coming from the sacrificed petals of the egoic lotus. It's coming from the inner petals and the jewel. It's coming from the atmic plane, ultimately from the monad. We together invoke together the presence of the spiritual will. We imagine this happening. This spiritual will strengthen our instrument here, our triple searchlight, with which we intend to do our imaginative, energetic work upon the astral plane. And so now we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. That's our group light together, focused on the goal, on the astral plane, of dissipating the glamour of hatred combined with the glamour of separativeness. We remind ourselves what we're trying to do, what we will do. So those are the two glamours that we are choosing to address as a group. They are so related. And now we're going to utter together, while using the creative imagination, we're going to utter these words of power. And as we do that, we're going to visualize the light we have created penetrating into the glamour and producing its weakening and dissipation. So we'll use our creative imagination as we utter these words of power. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. the power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. Power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. We will continue using our creative imagination as the work goes on. The work is proceeding, and the three words of power are taking effect. and invoking the presence of the group, one can at different times in a protected state do these mini dissipations at various times during the day, memorize the words of power, memorize the protective formula till it becomes just a part of you. And in different situations, as you are stimulated to do, you can send forth the dissipating beam on behalf of the group. And so now we withdraw our beam imaginatively back onto the mental plane. We no longer think about the astral plane. And as an active group process, we shut down that light, that searchlight, which is our effective group instrument, and of course it can also be used as an individual instrument. And we will sound three ohms together, confirming the work that we have done together. And working in this subjective way with these occult techniques, we are preparing the way for a major onslaught against world glamour, which will only intensify in the coming years. There's a lot of it to deal with because we're at the close of the age of Pisces, so all those glamours which have been generated under that potentially astral influence, so many of them may come to light, and so many illusions and misleading desires, and we will have to literally stand as a beacon of internal light and work with these using the words of power and the formulas for dissipation, that we can continue, and you know, we will continue working with the other techniques also. Technique of indifference and technique of the presence, the most advanced technique. Okay, friends, I hesitate to, you know, to do much discussion now. I think the discussion time is best done when we're doing our academic work now. Just kind of stay in it and hold that attitude. Tomorrow night we'll be working in the destiny of the nations, and you can use your comprehensive link for all the ASK programs, and hopefully this time we will not be giving you a silent movie, but I will have figured out, you know, how using this portable transmitting system to give you some audio as well. It was a very beautiful meditation yesterday that Tuya led, but it was mostly for the inner planes. Sorry about that. So Olivia Hansen, Tuya Robbins, and myself, we invite you to participate in the glamour work again next week and in any of the other ASK programs that you would like to work with us in meditation. So that'll be it for tonight, our tonight, and all the best to all of you. Thank you for your participation, and all of these, Brett puts these up on Makara. In Brett, what is the link that you use, or there's a special link, right, for this?
There's a link that's for the Glamour events, yes, and it's at makara.us.
Okay, makara.us. So if you want to review the process, you can go there, or if you want to tell other people who would like to participate with us and could not make this, they can go there and they can meditate with the video that will be provided. Oh, meanwhile, thank you everybody for your work. Appreciate it very much, and let's continue to work subjectively together and with potency to improve the world situation as we work from the subjective angle. All the best to all of you, and we'll see you, maybe some of you, tomorrow night on our broadcast. Take care and bye-bye. Thanks, staff, for all of your help. Talk to you later.